The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. We're on today's show. We're going to dig into some of the year-end and upcoming year tax changes, kind of the rules and forms and numbers. And we're going to take advantage of Joe Montana, a.k.a. Joe Madonna, our resident enrolled agent in the office here. She happened to be around, so we snagged her and said, hey, it's the time of the year where we need to talk about things that are going to change upcoming here or in the process of changes. Maybe it was a change for 2019 that you're not going to experience or notice until 2020, but we snagged her and said, hey, come talk to me on the podcast. So. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for reacting so quickly to this. So we've got maybe half a dozen things.
Seems like a normal circumstance for me to come into the office and, oh, hey.
And suddenly have,
like
by the way.
Yes.
Hey, do you have just a second?
Right.
Do you have time to squeeze this in? So Jim is not joining us today. He's preoccupied. But we do want to thank everybody for listening. And why don't we... I don't know. I wouldn't have to go in any particular order. What would you like to mention first about taxes and the new year?
Well, I would like to mention first about the 1040 SR, which is
brand new.
Brand new and very exciting for seniors. If they can do this, it will save them cost of having a tax preparer file their taxes for them. And it'll make it a lot simpler. So I guess I'll explain what the 1040 SR is. It's sort of like the old 1040 EZ, you know, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they eliminated basically, you know, the old 1040 forms, the EZ. And this form kind of replaces that in a sense. It's just only available for people who are older than 65. So it is a simpler form for retired or maybe semi-retired people who are over age 65. It actually is larger print. It's two pages. And you can report easily on there your retirement income, your Social Security. There's actually specific areas for each of those sources of income, which makes it easy because a lot of retired folk only have certain sources of income. They don't have wages anymore. They don't have self-employment, you know, other things. So they can just merely calculate their Social Security, any retirement income that they have, and report it very easily on this form called the 1040 SR, which stands for 1040 Senior.
Nice.
So the only, I guess, maybe not downfall, but thing that might deter people that are retired from filing this form that I can see is if they itemize deductions. So they cannot use this form if they itemize.
So they have to take the standard deduction.
They have to take the standard deduction in order to use this form. However, most people are using the standard deduction right now anyways, because it was doubled, nearly doubled in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So, most seniors probably are using the standard deduction now, unless they have a really high mortgage interest or they do a very high charitable donation or maybe some increasing medical expenses, that were not, expected. Other than that, I mean, most people have been using the standard deduction. So very exciting.
And it's nice that they created a simpler form, but wasn't as simple as the EZ, because the EZ had so many limitations on it.
Yeah.
It wasn't practical to use in place of this for seniors, because they have things like Social Security and retirement plan distributions and things like that that the 1040 EZ couldn't handle. So, you know, I think it's nice that they're coming out with something that's... Now I'm waiting for the day when you can just do your taxes with a postcard or something.
That,
just
that thing know, the, they claimed that they were that, going to do.
That someday, the, you know, the dream of, although not probably not a dream of a tax preparer, Probably will take a bite out of tax preparation revenues, but yeah, it's the tax code is a bit of a cluster. So there's going to have to be fundamental changes for us to get to a simple postcard.
Yeah, they really did claim that, this is going to be a lot easier for filing after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And I can tell you as a preparer, it was not any easier. They basically just split everything up onto different schedules so that you had to complete these other schedules to compile the same information for a one-page 1040. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you didn't have to do the work that you did before. You still had to complete the same information for the same sources of income. They just did it on different sheets of paper and then claimed that it was simpler because it's a one-page 1040.
Yeah, there's some countries that take an interesting approach to this where they send you a prepared tax return. Yeah. And I don't remember what exact countries they are.
The UK,
I think there's
does
some
that.
European
I've seen it.
Countries. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That they take what information they have received about you from different sources and say, okay, here's what we would assemble if we were doing your taxes, and they send it to you. And if it looks okay, you just sign it and send it back, and it's done. And if you disagree, then you do your own thing. But by default can accept the government prepared tax return. I thought that was kind of an interesting approach. I haven't heard any murmurs about that coming here, but that would be a way to simplify a lot of people's lives. It'd be nice if you...
Somehow I highly doubt it.
What I always wondered is if they sent it to you and they were low, right? But it was them saying it, you would say, I agree to this. And because they were the ones who proposed it, if you get off the hook for underreporting or something like that. I don't know how those kinds of rules work.
I don't either. I've seen that form because I had an international client, a year or two ago that had come over here. Mm. So he had to finalize a tax return from over there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, it was incredibly simple. When I looked at it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so easy. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Nice. Anyway. So, 1040 SR, look for it at your local IRS office, I guess, or download on,
right,
on
the
IRS website. So.
Yeah. And it was not the IRS's idea though.
No,
it
was
not
a congressional thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. What else might be coming up here next year?
Well, I figured we'd mention the standard deduction. Of course, people probably remember that it was nearly doubled with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So,
as part of lots of other changes. That sounds like great news, but they took other things away.
They did.
So it was a trade-off. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, it did double. So everybody kind of knows that, and we will see increases, because they do increase for inflation. So, where it used to be that the standard deduction rate for a married filing joint return was $12,700, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act then increased that to $24,000. And then now it's going to be $24,800. It'll be $12,400 for single filers and then $24,800 for married filing joint filers.
Right. Was the old standard deduction doubled for married filing joint? Or if I remember correctly, it wasn't actually doubled,
it wasn't
doubled,
nearly
right?
doubled, but
yeah,
it was close.
So under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, it's nice and at least they made it simple. One person, was $12,000, married filing joint was $24,000. Now it's going to go to $12,400 single, double that, or $24,800. Now that goes into effect in 2020, which you'll be filing in 2021, right? So don't jump the gun on this when you're figuring out your taxes in 2020. Remember, those are actually the taxes you owe for the tax year 2019, which currently in 2019, the standard deduction married filing jointly is just the round $24,000. Okay. Don't get the benefit quite yet. You'll have to wait a year. But it technically goes into effect in January.
It's
so
actually,
we thought
I think
we'd
this year it's 20,
mention it.
For 2019, it's 24.4, I think.
Oh, is it?
2019, I think it's 24.4. And then
well, that would make sense because it's now the second year of the
Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Yeah. So it started at an even 24.
24, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I get my years.
Well, taxes are funny because people always think about it. Well, I'm doing my taxes in fill in the blank 2020.
Yeah,
but those are actually the taxes for 2019.
Yeah. I always tell people I don't actually begin my new year until after October. So, it just has become 2019 for me finally. So
after you get past the extension deadline,
right, after October 15th, the extension, then I'm finally entering 2019. That's so funny. I only have a few months of that.
Okay, nice. A little bump in the standard deduction for which most people claim now because it's much higher.
Yes, and remember that won't always. Well, we don't know that won't always continue.
Might end after 2025.
Yeah, so we don't know what's going to happen. But for now, I guess we'll enjoy
it. A few more years.
Like you did mention, too, we got rid of a few things and we gained a few things. So they did double that standard deduction, but they also repealed exemptions. So you no longer get this exemption amount, which, you know, so give and take a little, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it will disappear likely after 2025. But
or
we
before
don't know
if they overhaul
that's
the tax
true.
Code before that. You never know what's going to happen.
Never know what they're going to do.
Kind of surprised me that they did it as quickly as they did the last one. Because remember the last one kind of just suddenly happened.
Right.
It was kind of, there's always been these murmurs about making changes and then nothing would happen. Yeah. And then suddenly, bam. Wasn't it in December?
Mm-hmm.
That it just kind of suddenly, let's talk about it. Let's vote.
Yeah.
And
it was there.
And it went through.
Yeah. It was like, okay, sure.
Be ready.
Not? Yeah. Okay. Well.
Okay. So what else we have?
Well, of course, there's always the inflation changes for the tax brackets. So each tax bracket, you know, you get a little bit more room. So those are going up a little bit. I won't go through all of them, but just know that your tax brackets might be a little bit different. You might have a few thousand dollars extra to stay into a tax bracket. The other thing which actually was in effect after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but I don't know that many people know about it, is the alimony deduction that was eliminated. Did you know about the alimony deduction?
I vaguely remember there was something with that. Luckily, I'm not in a position to have to pay alimony, so I didn't pay a lot of attention to that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it can be pretty big for some people. So I don't know if this applies to some of your listeners, but you know, the payer is no longer allowed to deduct the payments for alimony. And then the payee, of course, is required to claim the alimony as income. Or not required to claim the alimony as income. So no
now after the change, before it was child support wasn't a deductible.
Right.
That the payer paid the taxes on that. They paid the gross amount without any deduction or anything to the recipient of the child support. But alimony was the opposite. Alimony, they wanted it to, or at least they had it set up so that the recipient of the alimony paid the taxes on it. And usually the recipient of the alimony is a lower income than the payor of the alimony. Mm-hmm. So it was advantageous for the earners and recipients to pay at the lower rates. It's obviously not good. The less taxes that are paid, that harms the tax revenues of the government. So by making this change, by making it so the payer of the alimony has to report everything and without the deduction on their tax return, they're going to effectively be paying the taxes on those earnings instead of the recipient paying the taxes on those. So I think the net effect is tax revenues are going to increase because of this rule. And I think it's unknown, at least it's unknown to me, how that's going to affect divorce decrees that are in existence with alimony awards, if those are going to be revisited or argued, because the effective cost to the payer of the alimony has now changed substantially because they're going to have to pay the taxes on it, where before they didn't have to pay the taxes.
I think that they might have actually put in to like safe harbor sort of some of those people before 2018, before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So I wonder, I might have to look into that, but I think that if you
maybe
didn't
they
have
grandfathered
a divorce,
you in,
and then,
but any
that's a
new
better word than safe harbor, but
oh, that would make sense
that they might
because
have done that.
That's going to drastically change the effective cost for the payer and the effective receipt of the recipient of the alimony with this. This is a big change.
Right. Because if you think about it, I mean, you would want to, if you're getting a divorce, you would probably have a different feeling on this alimony payment based on the tax implications of it.
Right.
Before you had this feeling and now it's like, oh, it's changed. So I don't quite feel the same way, but you have this divorce decree, you know? Mm-hmm. So you would think that they would either allow you to go back or maybe I want to say that they might have just grandfathered in everybody before.
I bet they'd grandfather because otherwise they don't really have the authority to force a change right. in the award
Ooh,
itself.
Can you imagine how difficult that would be?
Yeah, and that would be talk about clogging the courts up with renegotiating. So they probably did grandfather that. Maybe I'll look it up the next time you're talking. But
okay.
That would make more sense. We're not divorce attorneys, so we're not talking about that piece. It's really just that the one thing that is changing. Did that change in 19, or is that changing for 2020?
It was in place for 2019.
Okay.
As well.
So the reason why we're mentioning it now is because you're going to be filing your taxes soon for 2019. You haven't actually filed the first tax return where alimony is not tax deductible. But if it was before, our bet is that you're grandfathered in. But I would consult your legal advisors and tax advisors before deciding what you're going to do with the alimony itself. But the change going forward has definitely been included in the law, so alimony will no longer be deductible. So the earner of the wages and the payer of the alimony will pay the taxes on those earnings, not deducting them. Effectively making it so the recipient pays taxes on those earnings at whatever rate they were at. So that's a pretty fundamental change. It's been this other way for a long, long period of time.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know if it's something it's already been in effect, but I thought that might be some topic that maybe a listener might find intriguing if they didn't already know.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, okay. Do we want to talk about AMT?
Sure.
The big old AMT.
Yeah.
Scary one.
Scary one. You know, it is scary before. There's people that always hear about it, and then as their careers progress and their earnings get higher and higher, they're always worried about, oh my gosh, when am I going to finally, it's like when you're walking through the forest and when am I going to run across the grizzly bear, right? The scary AMT, which stands for Alternative Minimum Tax, mm-hmm. of course. Which does sound scary, right? You could have paid this lower tax, but sorry, we're going to give you an alternative.
Right, you're welcome.
So what's changing there?
So,
Before that, maybe people who don't know what it is, can you give us a 15-second nutshell of what AMT is?
I don't know if 15 seconds will do good enough, but so it's essentially just this side-by-side tax system where you calculate your regular tax, and then there's these things that are deductions that they say, well, you cannot utilize those if you're at a certain income level, because we want you paying a minimum amount of tax. So for high income earners, this is really effect for them. So if you have high standard deductions or maybe some things that happen with stock and oil and gas, intangible drilling costs, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which I had to look into. But there's these certain things that are deductions on your tax return. And essentially the AMT is meant to eliminate you from taking all those deductions to pay a lower tax. You calculate your tax in your regular tax system. And then you take your AMT and you calculate your AMT as well. And
whichever's higher, you pay.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they're basically saying, sorry, you can't take those specific deductions because you still have to pay this higher amount of tax.
So there is a way you can kind of assemble a combination of deductions. There's really no one deduction probably that would cause people to be affected by AMT. It's more people who get really creative or really aggressive in pursuing or accidentally finding themselves in a position where they have a bunch of different deductions, taking advantage of a lot of the areas of the tax code, recognizing deductions in order to reduce their taxable income. And the AMT puts a floor on that. It creates a minimum that no matter how creative you get or aggressive you get with your deductions, you can't force your taxes below a certain amount.
Right.
And so are they changing the amount, or are they changing,
they're changing
the people who get affected by it?
Basically, the people that are getting affected by it is changing because they've increased the exemption amount and the phase outs on it. So people who used to be affected by it in a certain income level may not be now. So where before it was, if you exceeded 85,000 or what have you, you would start to be calculating the AMT, and now they've changed it. So it's like 111,000. So, if you were in that kind of zone where you exceeded 85,000, okay, your AMT is going to be calculated. Now you have like, you know, this in between zone that you still are staying out of AMT for longer. So instead of it being calculated at an earlier rate, you can earn more income without being pulled into the AMT calculation.
Mm-hmm. So is the cap, is this an inflation cap, or is this something that was built in in the rules?
They did change the rules in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act so that the exemption and the phase outs would start at different times. But each year it is actually changing. So for 2020, it's going to be, the exemption amount is going to be $111,700 for a married filing joint couple. And for single, it's going to be $71,700. So,
and is that AGI, or is it another one of these Maggie?
It's like an AMTI.
It's a
Yeah. So there is. It's basically I would say an AGI, but you do have to end up adding, when they calculate the AMT. Like I said, it's like the side by side system. When they calculate the AMT, you have to add all those things back in to get, you know, your effect. So AMTI.
Yeah, so AMTI.
but it is beneficial. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did, I mean, each of these amounts is kind of changing year after year, and the exemption amounts are going up. So in essence,
AMT didn't go up automatically before, did it? Didn't it take congressional action, or was it inflation adjusted? I don't recall now.
I don't think it was.
I vaguely remember that that was one of the problems, is that it was fixed.
It
so more and more and more people kept getting captured in the AMT.
Yes, that's my.
And now not only did they increase it, they indexed it for inflation. So it now goes up like the tax brackets do, like the standard deduction does.
Exactly.
Things like that. And that's a Washington, D.C. trick, by the way, people. this is a way that they can claim that some change is harmless, that, oh, so, you know, only 1% of everyone that files is going to be captured by this. So you don't have to worry about it. It's only the evil 1% that's going to be captured in this. Right. But what they don't bother to point out, if you're not paying attention, is that the numbers are fixed in the legislation. So then as time goes by, as earnings go up, as, inflation. You know, everything, inflation just happens over time, suddenly that 1% becomes 2% and then 4% and then pretty soon you turn around and 30-40% of people are affected by whatever it was that they mentioned. This was the case, for instance, with Social Security taxation.
Yeah.
You know, back when it was first passed, it was said, oh no, you know, so few people are going to have to worry about this, but they didn't index it for inflation and have never changed it since it was first introduced. The half of your Social Security being taxed, you know, under the Reagan administration is where that happened. And at that time, it was described as only, you know, again, just these very few rich people that have a lot of retirement income would ever have to worry about this. So you just know there's nothing to see here. Just look away. And now here we are 30 years later. Yeah. And I think the last time I checked, we've surpassed the 50% mark, meaning more than 50% of people now receiving Social Security have their Social Security benefits subject to income tax, where before it was income tax free. So that's that creep I'm telling you about. That's the kind of thing, and this happens all the time in the tax code too. They'll put in certain things. I don't want to derail what your list is here, but the IRMA issue is the same way, where IRMA, the income related
income related monthly adjusted amount. There you go.
which is essentially increasing your Medicare premiums if your income is over a certain limit. And they essentially said, we have a goal of capturing X percent of people in with this new tax, we'll call it. It's an adjustment, but it's a new tax. And so they set the limits at a certain point where they thought they'd capture enough people, and they didn't. So what they've done is they've left the limits fixed. Mm-hmm. and they're going to leave them fixed until they start capturing the percentage of people that they wanted to capture in this. Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where at first you're like, oh, I'll never hit that. And 5-10 years later, suddenly you've got a lot more. I mean, just think of it, just your Social Security. If that's one of your income sources, it goes up with inflation. So maybe now it's a certain amount. It's not of concern, doesn't trigger anything bad. But 15, 20 years from now, it might very well, even at low inflation rates, it's going to be a much bigger number 15, 20 years from now than it is today. So just kind of throwing that out there as a one of those
thing.
Politician techniques where they will set a number or a limit at a figure that doesn't seem to offend very many people
right.
currently.
It's okay now, but
but then they don't inflation adjust it, and it gets starts to affect more and more people.
Yeah.
So
they did that with the NIT too, the net investment income tax, which is kind of funny to me now that when I think about it, because this it seems like they're doing it to the support the Medicare system really, because the NIT is for Medicare, and then the IRMA. I mean, I don't know a ton about where it goes, but I would assume that they're doing that to float the Medicare system as well.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's putting off the demise of Medicare, which Medicare is in financially a far more precarious position than Social Security. Social Security gets all of the press, right? All the press about it, the trust fund going to dry up by 2033, 2034, somewhere in there. And at that point, if no changes have been made to the system, benefits will have to be reduced because the Social Security Administration is barred by law from paying out more than it has coming in unless it has this trust fund, this slush fund, this cushion, if you will. But when the cushion dries up, they'll be restricted to paying out only what comes in, and that's what's going to cause a benefit reduction unless there's a political change, a legislative change to the system. And people always focus on that, but the Medicare system financially is in actually far worse shape than that. The running out of money causing shortages issue is projected to happen much sooner than with Social Security. So they've made some of these marginal changes, like collecting more Medicare premiums from wealthier people, people with higher incomes in the IRMA, also with the NIT. That's what all those things are about. And again, they estimate they're going to capture enough at a certain limit, and if it doesn't work, they just either adjust the limit or in most of these cases they leave it fixed and let inflation force more and more people into being captured by these things.
Kind of tricky.
So, it is a little tricky. Yeah, those politicians are kind of sneaky, huh?
Yeah, right? I won't say anymore.
And we're not picking on any particular one.
No.
They're all sneaky like that. So
there's always some kind of underlying motive.
Yeah. So anything else you have? These are all interesting ones.
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, of course they're going to have you guys will end up talking about 401k and IRA contribution limits and catch up amounts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we'll be
eventually
starting to talk about a few of those things. Some of those limits have changed. The IRA contributions haven't changed, just to let the cat out of the bag right now.
Yeah.
But some of the retirement plan limits have increased as far as the contribution limits go. So Jim and I will be talking more and more about that. Today's show, I wanted to be a little more tax focused since you were
available.
Our special guest, or you're available,
available,
so I didn't have to. Well, we burned through the last time Jim was out of the office. I burned through some Social Security stuff. So, and it's always kind of boring and dry to just have one person talking. So I didn't want to do another solo show. So when you look like you weren't busy at the moment I approached you, you got tripped. So I do appreciate you coming on, and want to remind people that we do a lot of tax work here as part of our retirement planning, both tax forecasting and projections, looking for concerns, if you will, danger zones or opportunities in your tax situation. Do you have a special tax term for?
I liked the danger zone. That was
looking for danger zones. Looking for the danger zone.
Danger zone. Yeah. But I thought that might not be appropriate.
It's all good. We don't do a lot of singing on the show. Yeah, maybe we should do more of that. But you might wonder why we have an enrolled agent in the office, and it's for that purpose. And then we also do tax returns for our clients as well. A lot of clients find it convenient to have a lot of their financial assistance come from one source, and we do perform the act of tax returns, mostly for our own clients. But a lot of the really, really interesting work, in my opinion, and luckily Joe seems to find it interesting, is in the tax projections and hypothetical approaches to retirement, in that making certain decisions in the ordering of things, or spreading out of things, or acceleration of decisions that affect taxes can affect beneficially your overall lifetime tax situation. And I always remind people, every dollar that you keep and don't pay out in taxes is a dollar that you get to spend on what you want to do, instead of the government spending it on what they want to do. Not that the government doesn't need some taxes, but within the tax rules, there's no reason for you to pay more than you are required by the law. And a lot of people move forward into retirement with a much more complicated tax situation than they realize. Mm-hmm. They think, I'm not working anymore. I don't have this. I don't have self-employment income. I don't have all this. It's going to be so simple, because I'm just going to have my IRA and 401k and some Social Security and a pension, and my tax life will be so simple. Well, it'll be simple and possibly super expensive. Because if you don't approach things correctly, you will end up sending in voluntarily, through your own inaction, voluntarily paying more taxes, either you yourself or maybe your heirs paying more taxes than you are legally required to pay. And most people would choose not to do that. And we help them figure those things out at times. And Joe's a big part of that. So thanks for your contribution to the office, by the way.
Thank you.
Sure. So we want to remind people that you did seem a little uncomfortable with that.
My husband will tell you that. Compliments are not good.
Okay. Well, I'll keep it to myself then. I'll send you anonymous notes in the future. So we want to thank everybody for listening. And if you are interested in hearing what we do with retirement planning, jimhelps.com is the website. On there you can learn a bit more about us and what we do in retirement planning. We do offer what's called a coffee and a second opinion, which you can schedule right on the website there, either by reaching out to us or scheduling in the calendar app. That coffee and a second opinion involves a 30 to 60 minute initial meeting where we can talk to you about your situation, talk to you a little more about what we offer and our process here and our approach to retirement planning, which if you're a longtime listener, you probably have a pretty good idea. But if you're a new listener, we'd be happy to describe it to you. And that coffee and a second opinion meeting you can schedule on jimhelps.com. And hopefully Jim will be back next week. And we'll talk about who knows what at that point. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with you next week with a new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.